My name is Buzz Green and I'm a drunk. Glad to be here tonight. I came to believe. That's it. Thanks. This just boggles my mind that somebody would ask me to do this, but I can remember when I came here, I didn't want to be here. All right. Alcoholics are the last place that I really thought I wanted to be. I'd gone to meeting about 10, 11, 12 years before that. I went to a meeting and I didn't like it. And I went out and got drunk that night, so I figured AA doesn't work. No sense me going back there. But I came here because I had no place else to go. I didn't know what else to do. That one meeting ruined my drinking, even though it was 10 or 12 years before I got back here. From that point on to that first meeting, I was not having any fun anymore. Not even the illusion of having any fun anymore. I was just sick and tired all the time. I was drunk all the time and I was sick and tired all the time. And I knew I had a problem, but I thought I could figure it out. And so I kept coming back. And if you talk about insanity, the things I did in that 10 years that I was out there drinking, it was insanity, you know. And when I put myself into old 2R North at St. Vincent's Hospital in 1974, I knew that they were going to give me a couple shots. See, when I talked to the guy downstairs, the intake guy, he told me that when I went upstairs, they would give me a couple shots. I'm thinking, you know. They give me shots back here. And I knew the reason they did that was they were going to knock me out. And I would wake up in one of them straitjackets with my arms behind my back where I couldn't move. And they were going to take me to North Warren. And that's where I was going to be the next morning. I really thought that. Because I was so messed up. And I was screwing up my life so bad and everybody else's around me that I really figured that was the next step. There was no hospitalization because that time 2R North and I think it was 2R South, I don't know what it was, the other end of the hall was the mental cases. All right, they had me up with the high class mental cases, drunks. But I spent 5 days in there, or 10 days rather, 5 days was a program. I spent 10 days, and after 10 days, my attitude was so bad they shipped me out to Serenity West. And 10 days, or 28 days at Serenity West, and my attitude was so bad they threw me out. You know, back at that time, all the guys I was in there with were getting extensions. They didn't quite get this program. And they thought if they give them another week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you know, but I guess my insurance wasn't paying for that. And so they told me to get the hell out and quit wasting their time. And they told me I wasn't probably going to stay sober 10 days after I left there, so get the hell out. And I did. I called my wife and she came and picked me up. And on her way past the geriatric center, that time was still the old folks home. For some reason I knew there was a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in there. And I told my wife, I said, there's a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in there, would you like to go? And man, she whipped in that driveway so damn fast I still got a whiplash. And we went to that meeting, we got there just as it started and just as it left. Just as it was over, I left. You know, I don't remember a damn thing that was said. It was a real run training group, is what it was. I don't remember anything that was said at that meeting, but I remember at the end of the Lord's Prayer, I'd leave it. And we came in the front steps, and just as I was ready to step off that front step, a hand grabbed me and pulled me back. I turned around and looked, and here's this guy I used to drink with. I didn't like him. He was a drunk, a liar, and a cheat. Just like me. We didn't get along at all. We fought all the time. I had not missed him for 6 years. He'd been in AA. He got sober and I didn't even miss him, you know. He said, I'm going to be your sponsor. Crap. I missed that part where they get somebody you like, somebody you get along with. So I got this guy for a sponsor I don't like. And he reached around me and pointed at my wife and says, whatever you do, don't let her get in Al-Anon. Well, I was too late. She already was in Al-Anon. So she was an old-timer by then. I mean, she had 6 or 7, not that much, maybe 3 or 4 weeks in Al-Anon. And so I knew there was no way in hell I could possibly stay sober. I thought, here we go again, you know. And, but my mind at that time, I was so screwed up. Ed said, I'll see you at the meeting tomorrow night, and I did. He said, I'll see you at the meeting tomorrow morning, and I did. And he said, I'll pick you up, and he did. Or he says, you pick me up, and I did. Whatever he told me to do, I did. I don't know why. I really don't know why, other than that I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And Ed and I didn't get along at all. We'd go to a meeting and maybe the meeting was on Easy Does It. And we'd argue so hard over Easy Does It on the way home from the meeting that whoever was driving would pull in their driveway and we'd get out and be fighting on the lawn over Easy Does It, you know. Or one day at a time, or whatever it was, you know, really stupid. But we fought. Thank God, that's the kind of sponsor I got to start with. Because if I'd have got a nice guy like some of you guys, you know, if I got a nice guy like Jerome here, I'd never made it. I needed somebody to knock the tar out of me on a daily basis. And we did. We knocked the tar out of each other. But that's the way I started Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, when it says, that second step says, could restore me to sanity, they didn't say it would. Now, some of the old-timers are still waiting. They're still hoping I get there one of these days. But I came in here with an attitude. I didn't want to be here. I didn't have any place else to go. I didn't think that you could teach me how to quit drinking. I had to do it myself. My dad taught me to grab yourself by your bootstraps and stand up straight and take care of yourself and don't depend on somebody else to do it. And that's the way I was. And every other facet of my life, I could handle myself, all right? I didn't have any problems in the rest of my life except drinking. But then drinking would take over the rest of my life. Because of my drinking, I was never sober, and so consequently, you know, not being sober, I couldn't manage my business very well. Not being sober, I couldn't handle my family very well. Not being sober, I didn't pay my income tax very well, you know. I can remember, I told my sponsor, this is my second sponsor, I said, you know, the IRS is after me, I owe them some money. And he said, how much you owe them? I said, I have no idea, I haven't paid income taxes in a few years, you know. So he says, well, you call them up and you talk to them. I said, well, isn't the sponsor supposed to do that kind of thing? He says, no, you do it. So I did, and we made an agreement. Internal Revenue Service and I made an agreement where I'd pay him so much a month until it was paid off. I hate to tell you this, but I had almost 30 years in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous before my income taxes were paid off. But that's the point I had reached in my drinking. I just, you know, the only thing that I thought of when I woke up in the morning was how do I get that next drink? And it didn't matter what I had to do, how I had to do it, or when I had to do it. I had to get enough money to get a drink. And, you know, if I took a couple checks out of the back of my wife's checkbook, or I would... At one time, I had 5 checking accounts, and I could, most bars I went to, I could just rip off a piece of pizza box and make it out like a check, and they would cash it for me. You know, back then you could have counter checks, and I had checks floating all over the country, and all those things had to be cleared up and straightened out. You know, and I thought I would go insane, further insane than I was, because they talked about that second step. It could restore me to sanity. And not only did I drive myself nuts, I drove my family nuts. You know, I'm talking about the checks, and I can remember I was sober 4 or 5 years, and my wife's writing a check, and I says, "What's the date on that?" She told me. I says, "You can't do that." She says, "What do you mean?" I said, "You can't write a check. It's, you know, a date on a check. It's not here yet." She says, "Well, you used to do it all the time." I says, "Yeah, but that was illegal." I had convinced her of things like that. You know, I made her believe those things were all right, that I would get away with them. The insanity of my drinking was just unbelievable. I would get home 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And I would sleep for maybe an hour or so. I don't know how long I was sleeping. And then I would get up and go to the barn and do my chores. And I smoked back then, and I would be smoking and coughing and spitting and throwing up all the time I'm doing chores. And when I finally got the chores done, I would get in the truck and go to work, and I would get uptown to Seebacher's, and I would walk in Seebacher's at 7 o'clock in the morning. And God forbid if they were a couple minutes late opening up that door, right? And I'd go in there and I'd get me a double shot, and I'd drink down 2 or 3 of them double shots, and then I could be well enough to go to the liquor store. Used to be a liquor store where the jewelry shop is. Now I'd go to the liquor store and get a fifth and put it in my truck and go to work. And I don't remember the rest of the day. Most of the time I just don't remember. I don't remember ever taking an empty bottle out of my truck, but I must have. Every morning I bought one. Every morning I put one in there. But the insanity was overtaking me. All right? And so when I came here, I didn't want to hear about being insane. I really thought I was going to North One. And I'm here to tell you, I didn't go to North One. I went several times. My sponsors used to take me down. I used to have an AA meeting in North Warren, and we'd go in there. And I met a guy in there in North Warren that had, I think he said 18 years he was in AA at that time. And he went back out drinking, and he went into a permanent blackout and never came out of it. He was in North Warren Hospital. Had no idea who he was, where he was, or what he was doing there. But they used to bring him to that AA meeting. And my sponsors introduced me to him. And see, blackouts were a very big part of my drinking. I would go in a blackout and maybe last, you know, 2, 3, 4 days was nothing for me, sometimes 2, 3, 4 weeks. You know, I'd do jobs for people, and I'd go back a month later and try and do the same job. They said, "You already did that." And I had no recollection of ever doing it, you know. And usually I got paid for them when I did them, so. But I drank up whatever money I got as soon as I got it. The insanity of alcoholism, I kept doing it over and over and over again. And I couldn't figure out what was wrong. You know, it just didn't make any sense. And I'm going to read out of this little red book. I don't know if any of you have ever read this. This is one of the best things of studies in a big book I've ever read. But this is the accepted definition of insanity. A simple definition of insanity is a disorder of behavior that occurs when the body impulses no longer find in the brain a coordinating center for the conditioning of behavior. When this condition arises, the person's behavior is unpredictable, and he or she becomes legally insane. And I thought, you know, that was me when I was drinking. I had no idea when I drank what I was going to do and when I was going to do it. And when they talked to me about insanity up here, I knew I was insane, but I didn't know what it meant. I thought it just meant that I would take a drink when I shouldn't have taken a drink. But see, once I started to drink, I didn't know what I was going to say. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know where I was going to end up. And if I did went into a blackout, which was very often, I didn't know anything, you know, until I would come to sometime later. And people used to tell me, geez, why did you do that last week? And I would say, what do you mean, why did I do that? And they'd tell me some stupid thing I did, and I said, no, wait a minute. Was that me or was that my brother? And they says, well, you don't have a brother. I said, yeah, I got a twin brother. I'm Donald, and my brother's Buzz. Which one was it? And I got away with that a lot of times, you know, time after time. And sometimes nicknames are real handy. But see, that definition of insanity, I had no idea what I was going to do once I started to drink. I didn't know where I was going to happen or what I was going to be. And I could not take a drink. You know, I don't remember ever wanting a drink. Now, there was a few times I know I had a drink, and I was really pissed about that because that's all they were going to give me. You know, at a party at somebody's house or someplace, and I knew I was only going to get a drink. I didn't want to stop there. When I drank, I wanted to drink. If I was working and a customer offered me a beer or something while I was working, I would say, no thanks, I don't drink while I'm working. And that was a lie. I just knew that he was only going to give me one, and I wasn't going to start with one, you know, because I'd have to have another one. I'd have to have another. Some of you know TJ. I used to do his parents' house on a regular basis, and I'd go out to the truck in the latter years, and I'd get in the truck and try to add up my bill, and I couldn't add it up. And I'd get every time I added it, I'd get a different figure, a different number, and I just couldn't make sense of it. And so I would sit there the longest time. And I really didn't care about cheating them, but I didn't want to cheat me. I wanted to get as much as I could get. But I remember TJ tells me a story. His mom sent him out to see if I was still alive. She thought I died in the truck because I was sitting out there writing. You know, didn't know what I did. But those kind of things happen to me on a regular basis. I go into Seebacher's and I get that first drink. And after a while, it got one morning I went in there and I got a drink, and the drink wanted to come back up. And so I went in the men's room, threw it up. Somebody that day told me that's a sign you're an alcoholic, because I mentioned that someplace along the line. They said, that's a sign you're an alcoholic. Not me, I'm not an alcoholic. So a couple days later, the same thing happened, and I just slapped my hand over my mouth. I'm not going to be an alcoholic. And it came out anyhow, my eyes, my nose, I don't know, all over. And I remember poor little Annie says, what's the matter with you, Buzz? What's happening? I says, well, I got a bad cold, Annie, and I'm just clearing my sinuses out. But that told me that I was in... I had to get the stool in front of the men's room door. From then on, I got the stool in front of the men's room door because I never knew when that was going to happen. And it got to more and more, happened more and more. And I wish I had come into AA a lot earlier than I did, because I didn't know about that, putting a towel around your neck, you know, and you grab the shot glass and towel and you can pull it up to your mouth without spilling it. I never did that. I had him put it in a water glass, and I would go like this with a water glass trying to get it up there. So I did these things, and I did these things, and my drinking got worse. My life got worse. My family life got worse. My business got worse. Everything was going downhill. I was of the opinion that the world was picking on me. Everybody was out to get me. Nobody appreciated me. Cops were after me, all kinds of things. You know. I know today, though, all those fears I had were piling up in me. All that fear I had from drinking, the paranoia, the schizophrenia, that was all coming to the surface. And I didn't know what was wrong. I didn't know how to do it. If I got a couple drinks in me, that would go away. I might not go completely away, but it would go away. And it would last for a while. So that came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I knew I was insane. But when you talk about a power greater than myself, I didn't want to hear about that. I had been brought up, I had 4 years of catechism. I had the Bible literally beat into me. I had an old German pastor that used to just hit me and grab me halfway across this room. He used to kick me, he wore engineer boots on, and he would kick me if I didn't know the verses in the butt, make me bend over, and he'd kick me in the butt, and geez, that hurt, you know. And then he caught me in a balcony with his daughter, and he told me I was going to hell. And so when a preacher tells you you're going to hell, you can be pretty sure you are, you know. So by the time I got here, there were none of those Ten Commandments I'd learned about that I hadn't broken. And so I was pretty positive I was going to hell. And my personality at that time, if you're going to hell, you might as well go full bore. No sense of monkeying around. I'm not sneaking in the back door. They're going to know when I get there, right? And that's the way I went through my life. I didn't want to hear about this higher power stuff because I know today I believed in God. God, in my understanding, he tells us in a big book, every one of us is born with that belief of a higher power in us. I believed that. I had all that catechism, but I didn't believe in churches. I didn't. It was just something I was afraid. See, I know today I was scared to death. The God I knew, the God I'd been brought up with, hated me so bad that what I felt. That I, you know, all he wanted to do was punish me, and I was just going to be hurt and hurt and hurt. And so I didn't want to talk about God. If you don't talk about it, it'll go away. It's like the elephant in the living room. If we don't talk about the drunk, he'll go away, right? But I was always there. Right? So I don't know when I came to believe in a power greater than myself. It was by coming in these rooms, by listening to other people stand up here and talk how their faith in a higher power had turned their life around. And I watched people. I knew people in these rooms that I drank with people in these rooms. Right? And I could see the difference in their life. I could see the change in their life. And I would like to have that change, except I didn't know how to do that. And they talked about this thing called God. When I was in Serenity, that was back when mini skirts and high boots were in style, and I had a little counselor in there. She wasn't real young, she was probably about 30. But she had a nice set of knees on her. And to me, that was my higher power. You know, they said I could have anything for a higher power. Well, in those days, you know, they say you are what you think. I probably should have been a girl because that's all I thought about when I wasn't drinking. Girls are drinking, one or the other. I didn't like the idea of thinking about light bulbs or trees or stuff being your higher power, but I'd do most anything for a set of knees like that, you know. And I stayed sober, and they talked to me about a God of my understanding. And, you know, and if you got that feeling of God in here, not in here, because I always had a God was up here. You know, I knew there was a God. I understood that to my way of thinking. There was a God. I knew there was a God, but he was a punishing God, and he was up here. But by coming to these rooms, I begin to understand that the God of my understanding was really in here. And if he's in here, if he's in my heart, then he's my own personal God. And that's the way I am today. I'm what I call a born-again Christian because I was brought up as a Christian. I don't go back to church. But I love the idea that Alcoholics Anonymous was founded on, originally started with first century Christianity is how it started. And that was very easy for me to buy into that and to follow along with that. So the Oxford group and had a special meaning to me, still does. But That's where I still don't go to church. I've tried it. I come to that point in my life where I needed to grow spiritually more than I was growing, and my wife and I started going to different churches. You know, and I'd go to church for 2 or 3 weeks and then I wouldn't go. And then I'd go to a different church for a couple weeks and then I wouldn't go. And my sponsor says, "What's with all this church jumping? Why are you going to all these different churches?" I said, "Well, they're all a bunch of hypocrites, you know. Can't believe none of them. They don't act like they talk and all this." He says, "You think you're hypocrites?" I says, "Yeah." And he says, "Well, you ought to feel right at home then." So he was right, you know. He was right. So I went to one church for, I think, 10 or 11 years just to prove that I wasn't a hypocrite and I'm still a hypocrite. I got back to AA, and Alcoholics Anonymous is my church today. And that's where I found a God of my understanding, and that's where I'm comfortable with a God of my understanding. So when it says, find a power greater than ourselves, that's what I did. I found it in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous through people like you telling me how you found your higher power, how you're talk to your higher power. Your prayer and meditation became a very important part of my life. I can remember going to a seminar over in Lordstown, Ohio, and it was on prayer and meditation in AA. And I spent a lot of money to go there and spend a weekend there to learn two things. Prayer is me talking to God, and meditation is me listening to God. That's what I got out of the whole weekend, but that's still where I am today, you know. When I get up in the morning, I try and take some time in the morning before I do anything else, do my morning readings, and then just meditate for a while, just listen and see if anything comes to my mind and I think God wants me to do for that day, or however, whatever happens, you know. And then I get on about my day, and my day usually goes pretty good. Now sometimes I get away from that. There was a period of time last summer when I was on medication that was driving me nuts, and I was goofy and squirrely about half the time, and I'd get up in the morning and I would be so damn dizzy I couldn't read, so I didn't do any reading, and I would lay there in my chair and meditate, and all I was doing was negative, 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 you know, just thinking how the whole world's against me and I'm going to die at any minute and all this BS, right? Finally got the doctor, had him take some of my medication away. Now I'm back to meditating and it's all working fine, but I got to be careful how I think. And see, thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, because I kept going to meetings that whole period of time. I didn't stay away from meetings. I had a lot of good friends tell me I was acting a little goofy, you know, and quit being so damn negative. That's not really like you, but that's the way I was. And I didn't know why, I didn't know what was wrong, but it was the medication that was putting me there. Once I got off that medication and got that straightened out, now I don't have that problem now. And so I just tell you that to warn you, if you're on medication, and I think a lot of people are today. You know, when you get my age, doctors don't want you to die, they'll get a malpractice. They don't give a damn how you're living. I said, "Doc, I don't want to live forever, all right? I've already lived long enough to, you know, I've been dry enough now, I'm a fire hazard, for the Christ's sake. But I don't want to live forever. It's how I live that counts to me, you know. I want to be able to come to meetings. I want to be able to do things and go places and enjoy life. I don't want to be a vegetable. Just being alive is not the point to me. It's being able to do something with my life." And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. It's given me the ability to do things with my life today and hopefully again tomorrow. I'm talking too long again. Got any questions?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Buzz. I'm sorry. We'll have our question and answer portion of the meeting now. Just to remind you, questions should relate to the topic. And I'm to remind you, the group, the comments are welcome in the form of questions. So if we can start on this side this time. I'm sure there's somebody ambitious out here. Jeff, you've always got a word of wisdom.
Thank you, Buzz. Believe it or not, I've been looking up to you. As a little kid, as you know. It's just amazing how our paths crossed and we came to walk on the same trail again. It's kind of pretty good for me. But the question I have for you is, it says here in the book, second, to get sober and to stay sober, you don't have to swallow all of the step right now. I wonder if you could elaborate on that just a little bit.
Yeah, if I'd have had to swallow it all right now, I'd have been out of here a long time ago. My education in Alcoholics Anonymous is what they call it, slow variety. All right, like I came here, I don't know, a long time before I ever really read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came in, they told me, just read chapter 5, and we all know that's how it works. ABCs of chapter 5, A, that we're alcoholic, couldn't manage your own life, that's step 1. And B and C, no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, and C, that God could and would if he were sought, that's step 2. So those are the first two steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you really read that and believe that, then you've taken the first two steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the way I started. But see, I came here and I read chapter 5, and then I didn't read any of the other book. If they'd have thought that was important, they'd have told me to read them first 4 chapters. I didn't know. I never read the first 4 chapters. I was sober a long time. I went to a Joe and Charlie seminar, and they started at page Roman numeral 1. What I did was had to start all over on chapter, in the first 4 chapters got me ready for chapter, for step 3. Alright, the first 4 chapters are what taught me that I was an alcoholic. I didn't know what was the matter with me other than I drank too much and I drank too often. And I told you I thought I was nuts, but I didn't know why. Alright, but those, the doctor's opinion and Bill's story, all of a sudden, after I read them, and I'd been sober quite a while, and I read them and I understood now what an alcoholic was. An alcoholic has an allergy to the body and a compulsion of the mind, and that was me. But I didn't know what to do about it. But see, when I read chapter 5, that gives us the steps, so I thought if I worked the steps, I'd be all right. Problem was, I had the answer. I didn't know the problem. And so, after I got through step 3 and started on step 4, all right, then I began to understand the problem. And reading chapters 4 and 5 and 6 taught me all about the problem and what the solution was. Right. Any more? You got to answer your question?
Thanks, Buzz.
Hi, Buzz. I'm Bridget. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for your talk tonight. When you talk about a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity, would you say or not say that your concept of God evolved over these years that you've been in AA? You talked about knees, and then you talked about churches looking for God. So I just wonder, has your concept of God changed over the years, or how would you describe your evolution of not having that power, that it is a power greater than yourself?
It changed a whole bunch from the knees. I mentioned that one time when my wife was here, that changed real fast. But it's changed and evolved the longer I'm around. I used to go into the prison a lot, and I used to tell those guys, I don't care what you believe, You know, if you have a religion, that's fine. If you don't have a religion, that's fine. Just believe in something, you know. And I think that's the way I started, just believing in something. I wasn't sure what it was. But as the longer I'm in and the more I try and make that contact, it says that sea was though you were sought, you know, and so I've sought God for a long time. And I'm still seeking God. I'm still trying to get closer to Him. Early on in my sobriety, I was really looking when I was bouncing around churches and stuff. Catherine Marshall wrote a book called Something More. I don't know if you know who Peter Marshall was. He's a world famous evangelist. And he died, and his wife Catherine wrote a book, and it was called Something More. I bought that book. And I read that book, and in that book it mentioned that the most spiritual people that her and Peter had ever run into worldwide, all the religions and places they got, and they were world famous evangelists. The most spiritual people they had ever met were in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, here you are, dummy. You know, you're looking for something more than what you got. And that's the way I spent most of my life. You know, if I had a new truck, after a week, the ashtray was dirty and I needed another truck. Whether it was a horse, a dog, a cow, a girl, whatever it was. Something else was always, I was always looking for something better. And after I read her book, and I realized that all the spirituality I needed was in this big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And if it was the most spiritual people that she'd ever met, I'm sure as hell probably not going to meet anybody more spiritual than that. And so that's kind of why I quit going to church and just go to Sunday morning AA Little Run. That's my church. That's the day I devote to God in my way. All right. And I'm not telling anybody else they should do that. You find a God that, like I say, is in here, not up here, but in here. That answer your question?
Thanks, Buzz.
Hi, Buzz. Diane Washi here.
Hi, Diane.
You mentioned when you got caught up in the balcony with the pastor's daughter that you knew at that point you were doomed. When did you find hope that life was going to get better? You know, when we all, I think, at some point felt that we were insane and that life was totally out of control. But when did you find that you had hope that your life could turn around and it could get better?
I've thought about that a lot. All right. And I think it was the first Erie conference. All right. I was on the first Erie conference committee, ticket committee, and then on the day of the conference, a one-day conference back then again in downtown. And again, an auditorium. And I was on the registration table all day. The only meeting I went to was Father Pete from Canada. He was still a priest then. Was the final lead. And after his lead, we held hands and closed the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. And tears were running down my cheek when I was saying the Lord's Prayer. And that had never happened to me in my life. I didn't cry in front of everybody. You could cut my arm off with a hacksaw and I wouldn't cry. You know, I might swear a hell of a lot, but I wasn't going to cry. And nobody ever. And we had to go back through the alley to the chapter house over there. I think that's what it was. And because we'd left the money over there. And